We're having a redraft, folks.
Redraft?
It's redraft time.
UBI.
We'll let you all speak. Senator,
you can't afford to wait for information on these issues.
Okay, guys, you know what? America does not want to witness a food fight. They want to know how we're going to put food on their table.
What up, world? Welcome to episode 88. That's right.
Infinity times two.
Yep, in case you weren't sure what that looks like, it's two eights back to back.
Which, if you turn on the side, is actually two infinity symbols stacked on top of each other.
That's exactly right.
Mind blow.
Today is Tuesday, July 2nd. We're recording this episode at 6:57 p.m. The year is 2019 for those of you listening in the future and beyond. I don't know what's beyond the future, but...
Infinity is beyond the future.
Infinity, we already know.
Okay, guys, my brain's already exponentially leaking out of my ears. So,
it's another day
my fifth grade teacher told me that that's your brain leaking out from watching too much television. So, FYI.
That's funny, because I don't really watch television.
Is it just screen time in general, or is it just TV?
I would imagine at this point it's probably screen time, but that was when we were fifth grade. So, like, you know, back in the day.
Whoa.
So my mind is still melting, even though I don't watch as much TV, but I stare at a computer most of the day.
Yeah. I think that would, if the theory works, then yes, I think so. But that's another podcast. That's the Bill Nye podcast.
It's a philosophy podcast we're foreshadowing for beyond the future. Today, though, in this moment, we are going to talk about the candidates, the Democratic candidates for President of the United States in 2020. We're having a redraft, folks. It's redraft.
Redraft. We felt it was not necessary, but we thought it'd be fun after watching both of the debates last week.
It gives us a structured way of understanding or talking about the candidates, and we struggle with structure, so hopefully this will help.
Yeah, exactly.
It's true. I must admit, sometimes structure is not our strong point, but I will tell you that if you do want to listen to our first draft, that's episode 75. It's titled 2020 Democratic Primary Fantasy Draft. We've installed a search bar on the website. It's pretty fancy, so feel free to use that.
I didn't even know that. Shit.
Like what date was it?
That was on...
I believe it was in February, if it's not in front of you.
February 20th.
There we go.
Of 2019. So feel free to listen to that episode. To get a taste for our initial draft, and then jump back to this one. That said, we've got John Kelly here in Lakewood, Colorado. Hello, sir.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Doing well.
For a second, my brain was telling me you're in Littleton. And
I mean, I live in Westminster, but it's whatever. It's Front Range. It's fine.
I know. I messed it up last week. Don't worry.
Every day is my first day, you guys. Every day is my first day.
It doesn't matter. The listeners don't necessarily need to know where I am at all times.
Do you have an address you could provide? And maybe a social security and a bank account PIN number?
1776 Freedom Lane, Ameripod County, Colorado.
Thanks for giving out our password, man.
No, John, thank you for just giving out our password.
You thank you.
It's been updated. That is our old password. And in Evergreen, Colorado, John Anderson. Good day, sir.
Oh, hey, everybody.
How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man. Don't thank me. I thank you guys for letting me host this beast of a podcast we've got going on here. And Tyler Grillo.
Yeah.
California.
Yeah.
So far.
Yeah, you're welcome.
It's still so close.
You're welcome, you John Lennon looking motherfucker.
These are my mood shades. It's about to get a little heated here, so I want to put on my face. It's my poker face.
Oh, see, you need to get more amped, not less amped.
Is that like when people wear sunglasses when they play poker.
Exactly.
It's like okay. The dude.
Yeah. You guys, this is amazing content for this medium.
Yeah, everyone's loving the visual jokes. We're like Mitch Hedberg.
Should we have some more jokes?
Now that.
I'm your host, Poker Face Blake Mannion.
That's all what right. We call him. It's true.
So you can show me your poker face. All right. Who hosted this drink?
I think Kelly laid down some of the law.
Yeah, I think I did. So I'll jump into it again. Basically, for people who did listen, we had four rounds and a celebrity round. And I think what we decided to do this time is that each one of us is going to go through and pick a keeper that we had from last draft. And then everybody else is back on the board that we had picked last time, and also people who weren't picked last time are still on the board. We have a new draft order. We decided to flip it from last time. So I think we're going to go ahead and start. We'll go through the keepers in the same order we did in the first draft. So we'll just do Tyler, then John, Blake, and myself to do the keepers. And then the second round will start with me drafting the first pick.
And I just want to, for the record, state that whoever came up with the idea to flip the order is a stupid moron.
Yeah. Really, really screwed himself over there.
Who the fuck came up with that stupid idea?
It was John Anderson.
Hint, it was John.
Listeners, a little, to pull the curtain back, we thought about randomizing it. We decided to go with the flip. Turns out I would have won the random order, but, you know, it was my idea. So, of course, because karma, so let's do this.
Wah, wah.
So who is first?
Tyler, give us your keeper.
Yeah, Tyler, you're up.
Great, same number as last time. Well, okay, well, dear listeners, I'm sure you all remember who I picked last time and have been really tracking it with bated breath. But I picked Booker, Warren, and Michael Bennett, and then other people that's not important to say right now, like a Kennedy, just to like stack the deck just in case. You know what I mean? Sometimes you just gotta throw a Kennedy
in
there.
It's a nice hedge.
Yeah. Although I did choose, my celebrity was Kanye West, and to be honest, it's between Kanye and who I'm actually going to pick.
Oh, for your number one?
Because Kanye's such a good pick in the celebrity
as
category.
Your keeper.
You know what? As Mariana Williamson spoke truth the other night, you need to meet on the battlefield with love. And I don't know if Kanye's bringing the love, but he's definitely bringing the weirdness, which might help. Anyways.
I hope, listeners, you had a chance to actually watch Mariana Williamson on stage. Whew. That was an interesting.
I guarantee you, you've seen her on the internet now.
At least watch the highlight reel. But I am going with, I'm keeping Cory Booker. That may be obvious. Keeping Cory Booker. I don't think Elizabeth Warren can beat Donald Trump. I think she's I like her platforms and what she stands for, but I don't think she can beat Donald Trump because she just plays right into his hand. And Michael Bennett, not really a good showing, really, in the debates. Disappointing. I also just think he's not, I don't know. If my third round pick was who I chose, that would have been a really poor draft time.
Wait, hold on. Time out. On the meh thing, what, you just don't think he's genuine or what?
Yeah, no, I think he just...
Is the way that he speaks?
No. I love the way he speaks. I just don't think he did he had to, like, blow it out of the water, you know, and to really be a viable candidate in the... So...
Well, he strikes me as a good senator.
And what happened with Bennett, I think, was... I really like Bennett, personally. And I think that he's just such a small fish right now in such a big ocean that he doesn't stand a chance, you know. But I think he's a genuine character and definitely a good senator.
Yeah.
To me, the most endearing thing about Bennett is his just deep loathing for Mitch McConnell, which I find so wonderful. And it's funny too, because he came in as an optimist and like the system can work. Let's work with the other side, pragmatist kind of guy. Yeah. And now he's basically like, burn it down and make sure and throw Mitch McConnell on a pyre. Yeah. It's like, it's awesome. I'm so into it. Like, yes, Michael Bennett.
Cabinet pick or something like that. I think he'd be good for the that kind
or of he'd be a great ally as a senator and just be like, dude, we're just gonna make your job is to burn it down. And like, maybe let's
like a whip,
do this.
Maybe like a majority whip or something.
Yeah, he'd be probably. I mean, I don't know what his relationship is with the rest of the caucus, but like he's a genuine dude.
I mean, the Democrats
like
would have to win back the Senate first before he could.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves here.
I would say that, you know, Booker's a great pick. I thought he had a good debate last week. He had a lot of FaceTime. I don't think that he lost any ground in the race, which I think some of the candidates did, which I'm sure we'll get into. The other thing I'll say about Bennett,
did you see?
And I don't think this discludes him from a pick from one of us later on, but I think the demographics of the Democratic Party has shifted too much for him to be a viable candidate for the party. If this was 1995, he'd have been perfect.
Totally.
But it's not.
Totally.
So, All right, John, you're next up, bud.
Wait, John, before you go, can I want to make an explicit statement? Just in case our viewers aren't clear, I'm not sure if we said this already, because I'm a little bit But we just wanted to be really clear that that we're picking who we think will win the presidency, not who most likely to win. Who we think is most likely, because it's not about who and that it means beat Donald Trump, right? And it's not necessarily aligned with the person we think is our favorite platform that they have, or who we think has the best policies or track record or anything like that.
It could sneak in a later round.
Maybe.
You know,
shall see.
Dark horse it.
Can we pause on Booker real quick before I make my pick? I have a question for you, gentlemen. I was watching it with a friend of mine, and we both were like, Booker was fine. Like, he was fine. I think he did everything he needed to do, but I would call it a push as far as whatever. But most of the chatter afterwards...
I think he did well in his funding after the debate. So.
Yeah, that's the thing is, and that's my question to you, is most of the chatter afterwards and the aftermath seem to have been that he had a good night, like a legitimately good night. And I wonder if that I just have had too much exposure to him, and I kind of like I don't mean this as negatively connotated as it is, but like I've seen his shtick before. And so I was kind of like, cool, that's Cory Booker. Like, let's move on. So I'm wondering if you guys had a similar reaction, or if you did think he had a legitimately good night, or what? Because that was one of the few things that I was kind of like, I feel like I disagree with the, quote, conventional wisdom coming out of this.
Well, I guess I think he had a good night for being on the national stage in the spotlight. You know, I mean, not spotlight, but as much as anybody up there was spotlighted. He got a good amount of time. He didn't say anything or do anything surprising like some of the other candidates that we might get into, and in positive or negative, right? He didn't like have a blunder, and he didn't do something negative.
I 100% agree. Like, I think that's why, John, you feel kind of like, meh, that was him. I get it. You know, people who follow him closely and have followed what he's been, you know, doing in Congress for the last couple of years, get it, because he talks in a very similar manner about a lot of issues over the past couple of years. So I get that, but I think on a national stage, it's introducing him to a lot of people. So I can see, one, how that would get the positive backlash in terms of more funding and more people paying attention to him. I also think comparatively to the second night where it was a little more ferocious, I feel the debate was, it was a little more lively, that people might have looked back and said, oh, he actually had a better night than some of the people who were maybe a little farther ahead or even with him with how they had a second night. So... do you want to go ahead and do your keeper now?
Word.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I picked last time, for those not following along at home, Amy Klobuchar, Kristen Gillibrand, Michael Bloomberg, and Mitch Landrieu. Obviously, I am a strategic genius.
Genius.
And have superior picks to you motherfuckers.
Whoa, easy.
And so I will be keeping Amy Klobuchar.
Yeah.
I think that although her stock has fallen, she had a fine night at the debate. I don't think that she hurt herself at all. I don't think she gained anything, but she continues to be in the game, which I think is her strategic imperative. She is one of the most electable candidates, I think, in the general election. She's kind of like, I'm the adult in the room, and I'm not going to tell you you can have a bunch of free shit if I don't think I can give it to you. Right. So I think she would do. Yeah.
I think it plays well in certain states during the caucuses.
Yeah, I think she would like. Well, and I think in the general even more. Like she gets us Minnesota, Ohio, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. Like I think she recaptures the Rust Belt. I think that she will have a really difficult time getting out of the primary, but I think if she does, she would be one of the strongest candidates for the general, and therefore I'm keeping her. I'm also keeping her because I don't like anybody else really, including her. But you only have so many options, so such is life.
Amazing. Who's next?
Blake.
All right, here we go. So my original four picks were actually five, I guess, if we include the celebrity. But number one was Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, number two, three was Beto O'Rourke, and four was Tulsi Gabbard as my wild card. But and then my celebrity pick was Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Also a good pick. I think you got four or five to work with there, Blake.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, you do.
I mean, Tulsi had a good night.
I'm telling you, not
Tulsi. Tulsi did have a good night. Tulsi Gabbard, well, obviously.
She's still not electable, though.
She's not electable. No. I was playing such hard devil's advocate, if you listen back to that episode. I'm like, well, she's kind of like the female Trump. But like. I said something along those lines. I definitely will not be repicking her. But I did. I will say I think that she had a decent night bringing in her veteran and military experience, you know.
She made Tim Ryan look stupid.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Tim Absolutely. Ryan also did a lot of making himself look stupid because he really couldn't.
Make himself look stupid.
He couldn't string together a point. It was one of those things. It's kind of like our podcasts where like there's a starting point and it goes out from there and there's never any like circling back on anything. It's just kind of like we're going to go and see where it ends up.
Well, I mean like.
Story of my life.
It reminded me a little bit of like listening to Sarah Palin run for vice president.
Yeah, it was just no polish. Anyways.
Yeah.
Anyways, Blake.
Never mind. Continue.
So I'm going to keep it's a no-brainer for me. And I know she's not at I haven't looked at the ratings recently. I don't think she's at the top. I think Joe Biden's still at the top, but I'm going with Kamala Harris. She's a big obvious for me. Not only because she's always been my favorite, and I would also like to include this little bit of information. She's the only candidate I've ever been able to actually like donate money to in the first. So
Sweet.
So she's like my girl, man, and I really like her. And when she was at that debate, man, she really showed up. She called out Biden on busing in the state of California and talked about how that affected her as a little girl, called him out for some, you know, potentially very damaging positions that he's taken on the past that put into question his stance on certain civil rights, civil liberties, his maybe perhaps even his own, where he stands on race. And she not only did this, but she had a couple other great moments, like when everybody was bickering and she was like, hey, people want to know how we're going to put food on the table. You know, they don't want to see a food fight.
And yeah. Just
some really baller moments that she really showed up that night. I thought she,
you know, it was every time. I feel like every time she opened her mouth, she had a great moment, whereas anybody else who I liked had a couple of those great moments, but she had them almost every time she spoke. It was really remarkable. I think her prosecutorial background really helped her in this instance, and you could tell like that move she pulled on Biden was so good. Like her emotional tenor throughout it was the perfect issue. She used that personal connection. Like when you watch, it's great if you rewatch the debate, they have a split screen on Biden and Harris when she's talking. And when she – and Biden's kind of like looking down at his notes and is like, I'm getting killed right now. And then when he – when he – when she says, and that little girl was me, he looks over at her in surprise. And he didn't know that, I don't think. And so it was – you. She prepared that moment, but she executed it perfectly. Yeah. And I was just like – hot damn. And that food fight moment was perfect. She looked commanding. Like, she was empathetic though and relatable all at the same time. She was great. And so 538 does a great breakdown of the debates. I would just Google 538 Democratic debates. They have her coming out really, really well. They did a polling pre and post the debates. Before the debate, she was at 7.9%. After the debate, she was at 16.8%. A ton of that support coming directly from Biden himself.
Right.
Yeah. Doesn't surprise me. So
she had a great night.
That's what I would call like a slingshot kind of move, when you can take the person who's in the front, like racing, for example, like NASCAR and all that. And you or cycling, you know, and you're taking like that, almost that person's, you're behind their airflow.
You drift.
And then you just.
Right. Isn't that what it's calling? Or drafting. Yeah. It's drafting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like a slingshot is what I'm calling it. Like, fucking, it's just, it's going to shoot her straight to the front of this game right now. And it was such a clever move, you know, to really sweep the rug right from under him. But at the same time,
it was bold too.
At the same time, consider this. While she may also be stealing some of his momentum, she could also, she's also allowing him an opportunity to justify himself. And that could be a partnering, you know, a Kamala Harris Biden ticket, Biden being the VP again.
I don't know about that. I don't feel like he would do it.
I don't think he would do it either.
But my point is that anything's possible these days.
It's true.
And,
it's true. This
and,
is 2019.
And she left herself nothing but good options that night. So Kamala Harris is my pick.
Good call.
I'm just really curious about, I love the boldness of the tactical decision to punch the leader in the polls by a decent amount right in the teeth in the first debate. Mm-hmm. Agreed. Sweet.
And I think it was so refreshing to have her go and say, I'm the only person of color on this stage. I should be allowed to answer that question.
That was another
question.
Great moment.
That was such a great moment to have her come out and say, because it was, basically just a bunch of white people talking about it, and the moderators were almost ignoring her on race. Right. They were like, oh, we'll get to you. And she's like, no, this is not going to happen. Yeah. I need to say something. I was like,
well, because
good.
The questions are all over the place. You never know. You probably, like, she knows you might not get that question in any form again the same way.
I think she's one of the strongest candidates. I hope she gets farther in front. I also want that to happen so that she has the opportunity, and I'd like to hear her answer some of the ways she's voted and things she did in California as Attorney General. So
Tyler, living in California. You know,
me living here, there's a lot of people from California who are like, cool, but like, you got to answer for some of those things you did, especially around criminal justice reform or lack thereof. Anyways, I think she's one of the strongest candidates. I think people like with new candidates, like Joe's, like, we all know Uncle Joe's dirty laundry. It's been aired to us, right? Like, we know it. He's had a chance to respond to it. Like, newer candidates haven't had that chance yet. So people just start throwing mud at them. And, you know, I like to hear them respond. And, like, we all change and we all explain ourselves. So let's hear it.
Yeah. I think that's a solid point, Tyler. I think it's a solid point. And we'll see a lot more of it over the next 6 months. Yeah.
My last comment on this, and then we should move on, but was that Biden generally seemed very unprepared. And I think Kamala Harris saw that immediately and pounced.
Yep.
Yeah. He seems like he's phoning it in on more than just this. And it's concerning.
Yeah.
Well, let's put a cap on that to see if anybody actually picks him in the next couple rounds. We can jump back in.
Really lowering the expectations on that.
Well, I know, but if we talk all of our opinions about Biden when we actually get there, then we'll go, oh, I pick Biden. Move on.
Feel like we already did that in this podcast. We'll see.
Yeah. Fair enough. Okay, so I'm up next with my keeper.
Come on, Kelly.
For us listeners, for those listeners, I pick Sanders, Hickenlooper, Castro, and Yang is my four, and then Ellen as my select. And unlike everybody else who's gonna keep their first rounder, I'm not gonna keep Bernie as my keeper. I'm actually gonna keep Julian Castro as my keeper.
Good call, dude.
I thought he had a really strong debate in the first round. The first night, I thought he had a lot of good talking points, and I still, just like in the first episode when we discussed this, love the fact that he has mayoral experience, and I love that he's from Texas. So I think he's a strong candidate on the national stage.
I think he was your best choice. Yeah.
So, good pick. I have just absolutely loved the Marianne Williamson like meme factory that's come out from this debate. I think it's hilarious, but also like, that kind of shit is why Trump got elected. So I'm like, I need to figure out a way. Like, I want to share this on Twitter because it's hilarious, but I have to rebalance the scale somehow. So I have decided that every time I share a Marianne Williamson thing, I will give a dollar to a candidate. And I've done it once thus far. And the only person that I have given it to so far is Castro, because I thought he had a killer moment the other night. He really stuck a claim on immigration is an issue. I think he punched Beto in the face, which I'm fine with because I have no idea why Beto is there other than he's tall and stands on shit. And so
you rode a skateboard that one time.
Yeah, I'm just like, I'm confused about your existence.
He had a good speech one time. Yeah, it happened.
Yeah, it's just like, okay, sweet dude. So
he ran a pretty good campaign. He ran a pretty good campaign.
Yeah, but sort of like a lot of people. Anyways, so yeah, I'm into the Castro pick. That's great. That's great stuff.
I feel like Bennett and Beto O'Rourke, right, are on that same level of like, you know, great. You'd be great senators. You are a good senator.
I don't know if Beto O'Rourke is good at things. I think
Bennett has a lot more substance than Beto.
Yeah,
I would agree with that.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. So
Bennett has some morals and principles that he sticks with. I'm not really sure that Beto does.
Beto is just like the vanilla ice cream of this primary. It's just like, you're so boring. I don't know why you exist.
But if you consider where Texas is at, if you consider where Texas is at in their politics, you might think of Beto's positions a little bit differently.
I see what you mean.
It's like, you know, he might be he's actually a good progressive person for Texas to have as
he's a Texas progressive. Okay, we can give him a slide. Okay, right. Not much substance, but at least you're progressive.
Just a little respect to Beto. All right,
we're gonna do this actual draft now. We're gonna draft
now. We're in the actual draft now, we're getting
into the actual draft. First pick. Pretty easy for me because he was still on the board. Nobody picked him last time. Loved the debate. Mayor Pete.
Yeah.
Fuck off. Yeah.
Buttigieg on my board.
That's a steal from Anderson, isn't it?
No.
Nobody picked him last time.
I picked Mitch Landrieu and Pete Buttigieg, kind of, but I ended up writing down Mitch Landrieu. So,
because you like the Southern aspect.
Yeah, so very sad days. I'm devastated. He was going to be my picker, my keeper, until I looked today and realized that I fucked up totally. So, damn it.
Buttigieg had a great night, I thought.
Can we talk about the stare that he gave Eric Swalwell when Swalwell was like, you should fire the mayor or fire the police chief? I was like, that man is going to be scary in meetings if he becomes president. Holy crap.
I'm going to look that one up too.
I would have to say that his poise and his confidence struck me throughout the entire debate. And actually what sold me and what made me pick him first out of what's left on the board was his comment on the hypocrisy of Christianity in this country. I was like, I'm glad someone from the Democratic Party finally said it.
Mm-hmm.
even though we're not a party of religion, we need to call out the other side and say, if they're going to stand up and call themselves the moral right, they can't, they can no longer do that because of the way that they act in their policies. And I respected that because you don't see that a lot in Democratic candidates on a national stage.
I think the religious voting bloc in this country is naturally, should be naturally in the Democratic Party. And if not, but for the immigration, or I mean the immigration, the abortion issue, they would be Democratic voters.
Well, I don't know about that. I can't say that across the board.
I will say tracing back to like the history of how the evangelicals became part of the Republican primary, if you like rewind, or the Republican Party, if you rewind that clock, it's largely because of abortion.
I 100% agree with you on the history. I just don't know if there's actual evangelicals left in the movement that would push them back left.
Right. What I'm saying
even,
is like,
even if the abortion issue changed, I don't know you can turn the clock back to the 70s.
Well, I don't know. I think single issue voters are a thing. I think there would be a significant portion. There must be polls about this. There must be polls out there about this.
And I'm saying, like, if you took a time machine back to the 70s and then, reworked history, not starting from today and then working outwards.
Okay.
I agree. I'm saying I agree with your hypothetical, but it's not reality. I don't think it's reality right now.
Well, obviously it's not because we don't have
It's a good hypothetical.
Okay, it's clearly not reality. All right. It's clearly not reality, you guys. All right.
All right. So that was my pick. Blake, anybody else want to say anything before we move on?
I think that he had a fine debate. He survived, which he needed to do. I don't think he moved up much. I do think that the police issue in South Bend kind of put a ceiling, but that was a really vulnerable moment for him and he survived. I like that he took responsibility for it, thought he had a really good answer for it. And like it ultimately, I would say it was a strategic victory and like a tactical like draw for him.
Yeah.
Yep. I think that's fair.
All right.
Who's next?
All right. Next up, Blake, you got the next pick.
Ooh, do I?
Yes, you do.
Oh, man, this is a tough one. This is really hard.
Is it? John knows who he wants so bad. I can look at John and just feel it.
I mean, seriously, now that I have a better understanding of some of these candidates and now that I've seen them perform, I'm not so sure that I want to pick Biden as my number two.
That's exactly what John's hoping you don't do.
You can pick whoever you want.
But so that's what my heart tells me. But my brain is telling me data, math. and I mean, it's an obvious number two. Like, I kind of have to pick him before somebody else does because this is a game, right? And I want to win.
It's the idea. It's the idea. That's how games work.
That's if how drafts work. So I'm gonna have to pick Biden.
Blake sticking with the same two first picks.
Yeah.
Even though, and now that we're on him, we can talk about it a little bit more, but he was not prepared, right?
No, he was not prepared. He's phoning it in super hard.
Yeah. He's going to be nominated.
I don't know. I don't know if it's so much phoning it in as that I feel like he's conflicted in the messages that he's giving, because part of it is such a strong Barack Obama and I did this together, right? I was a big part of Obama's administration, and so you should elect me because I'll be basically Obama again. Right. And then the other half is, I have to defend my long-term record, which doesn't really match that thing to say. And so he does have to, I think, fight back and forth between those messages. And then, you might call it being unprepared. I think he just gets confused because he's an old man.
Well, I think if you were prepared, you would have a good answer to that. Like, I think it's relatively...
That's fair.
Perhaps an apology?
Yeah, I think it's relatively easy to foresee, you have an extremely long track record in the Senate, and the country, and especially the Democratic Party, was much more conservative then. So let's go through, and it's like, if, one of these several candidates of color, some of them who are also women, come at you about your history on, let's say, busing, what are you going to say about that? The problem is, I think there's like a cognitive dissonance, which is like, you know, I did nothing wrong there, but also like I'm the man for the future. And it's like,
yeah.
No, yeah. You can't. And so he needs to somehow be like, look, that was, you know, I'm a deal maker. And so I made a deal with the Republicans who I had to deal with then. But also I understand that the Democratic Party that I have now in the country is different now. And so the deals are going to be cutting are different now. Something along the lines of having a coherent answer instead of being like Kamala Harris pushed him into defending states' rights. His answer was, well, that's great because like your city council decided to do that. And it's like, dude, okay, so now you're standing on the Democratic debate stage defending states' rights for segregationists. Yeah. Like, that's not a good position to be in. And that was fairly foreseeable, I think, if you're a professional running for president who is the front runner. Yeah. Right.
The dissonance is really important, John. I think you're getting at an issue that underlines what Biden has tried to do to this case, which is present himself as a strong man to beat Trump. And one of those things that you have to be a strong man, especially in the same vein as Donald Trump, is to not be wrong about anything. You have to be right about all things that you do. And so he puts himself into a corner. Because he can't say the type of things that I think would really help him, which is what you're talking about, trying to reconnect some of the older votings that he had in the Senate and the more conservative parts of the Democratic Party to what he's trying to envision for the future.
I mean, I think that's right, Kelly. I also think that, or you have some good points there. I also think that like all right, fill space. I got it. But it's floating away. It's a good point.
Can I say something on this topic? And this is kind of applies to all of the candidates who perhaps either ran previously or are just generally old. Doesn't matter if it's female or male. So this applies to Bernie Sanders, Biden, Elizabeth Warren. Even though this is Elizabeth Warren's first year, so she's a little unique, but I have a feeling that we are, this is just my opinion, I think that the vote is going to be coming from so many youthful people in our population, right? What are we calling this generation after the millennial generation? Is it Y? No, not Y.
No, I think it's Z, or also they're digital natives.
Z.
I think we should refer to them as digital natives. I think that's the clearest we have currently.
So I think it's going to be an extremely hard sell for them, for that demographic, those first-time voters on your Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden kind of picks. And I think because of that and the amount of the vote that will include, and then we can talk like race too, people who are not white, but I feel like we're going to see kind of an ageist ceiling, so like a cap on their ability to perform, which is going to automatically put them into a VP category. I don't think they stand a chance, any of them, as a presidential candidate. I think that they make great VPs because they can take their experience and their wisdom and then their backing and then put it behind another young youthful candidate and propel them to a victory.
I mean, I do think that the young people seem to be more politically active. I think this presidential election is going to be a great test to how politically active are they? Because like, where are we at? Because old people vote. They have nothing else to do. Like, young people have things to do, like eat avocado toast and throw bottles at bank windows, you know? Like, so
that's what you're doing. Some of us are working ourselves to death over here.
And,
all right.
And I think that's an actual really good point. And just real quick before we move on, because we should get to John's second pick. In terms of the ageism, I think it hurts Biden more than, and probably Sanders more than it hurts Warren, to be honest.
Sure. I agree with that.
I think young people would connect with Sanders and Warren more, even though they're older, than they would with Biden's politics.
I think probably Warren's going to be the most connectable.
Well, no, Sanders has got like some weird, like ironic, maybe youth following. There's a whole thing about kids and Sanders. So anyways.
John, give us your pick.
You know what?
Give us your pick.
that may be his ticket to victory. And that's exact. That just actually proves my point, is that that demographic is going to be very important. But we should move on.
I am happy to pick Elizabeth Warren.
yep.
With the third overall pick.
And I would like to say that I totally think she's the best that you can pick out of the elders.
I would like to issue an apology to Elizabeth Warren. I almost left her off my draft board last draft we did. I thought that she was not going to run a quality enough campaign to be able to defeat Donald Trump. I have been very impressed with the campaign she's run thus far. I think it's been very serious. She has more plans than everybody combined. It's remarkable. Right. And you can see in the first debate, especially in the first third of the debate, it all ran through her. She's setting the agenda of the primary, much like Bernie did in 16, and she's working off the work that Bernie did in 16.
Well, and she clearly had a massive control, I think, of the stage the first night.
Agreed. It would have
been interesting to see her stand there with Kamala Harris and Biden and Sanders from the second night, and Buttigieg too.
Yep.
And see how that kind of played out, but I thought she was the strongest speaker on the stage the first
yes time. And I think that she would be, I always worry, because the president is about, like, Lyndon Johnson, minus the whole Vietnam thing, which was kind of a big deal, was a really, really good president because he wielded power really effectively. And that's how we were able to get the Voting Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, the whole fucking nine yards, right? And so I worry
that war on poverty. Yep.
Yeah. I worry that Elizabeth Warren will not be a good, she'll be more like Barack Obama, where people will be like, she's too professorial and needs to have dinner with Mitch McConnell more often. And so I worry about that. However, I think intellectually she would be the best president I have seen right now. It's just like plans. And I love how they are intellectually bold, and I think they take problems seriously, and they don't build policy around politics. They build policy around solutions. And I'm like, fuck yeah. So
I happen to agree.
Yeah, I agree.
I actually think the way that she's run it to this point, she's stronger than Hillary was during the last round.
Yeah. And I think she's more like coherent, I would say, maybe.
Yeah. I think she's great. Do you think she can beat Donald Trump, though?
That's the question, right? I mean, the fundamentals, I will say that she is at worst a replacement level candidate. So what I mean by that is, like, if you took random generic Democrat and ran random generic Democrat against Donald Trump, I don't think Elizabeth Warren would perform any more poorly than that. However, like, I think that, you know, someone like Klobuchar might be several people above replacement level, or whatever you want to use
Gotcha.
Interesting. Yeah. I think Warren's more electable than Klobuchar is.
Whoa.
On a national.
Wow.
I think
why?
She is.
She's more recognized, more better known.
I think that helps. Power. I think that helps. It's, you know, it's still, you run into this kind of wall, I think, in terms of the labeling of certain candidates. And the more I've listened to what Warren is actually talking about in some of her policy standpoints, the less I think that she's on the socialism side that she gets painted as. And she might actually be able to prove that to more of the voters in a national election, given debates, people that are in the middle, independents, than Sanders might be able to do, let's say, right?
Comparing to some of their policy measures. I'm sorry, I thought you said Klobuchar for some reason.
No. Yeah. I mean, it started with the Klobuchar.
I super agree with you that I think that Bernie is a socialist and will be painted as such and will never be able to run away from it. And yeah, I totally agree with you. Completely. Yeah. Sorry. My bad.
All right. Any more comments before we move on to Tyler's pick?
Only that I think you did say Klobuchar, but anyways, let's go.
I'm winning. Fuck all of you.
Tyler.
Ha-ha.
I mean, I have to go with Bernie Sanders. There's really nobody else that I would feel okay with choosing at this point on that board.
Getting, We're at a like a dip in the quality.
I mean, like, point. I think, yeah, I think these next few rounds we should just, because I have nothing to say about any of these people. That's not true. But yeah, Bernie Sanders, because I mean, he still is recognizable. I know a lot of people who still love him. I don't think he's gonna win, but you know, he's around. He's doing a good job. He should keep saying things. That's nice. Keep saying things.
I thought his performance at the debate was pretty lackluster. He was angry. Yeah. And also, like...
Him and Biden both.
Yeah.
They were getting outclassed by Harris, and they showed it through being hostile.
And really there's been...
Yep.
It's... You could have done a side-by-side with Bernie in 2016, and I don't think it would have been very different. And my chief criticism of Bernie this whole time has been, you have no practical way of implementing your agenda. And when he was asked about that at the debate, his answer was, to paraphrase, the people, which is not an answer at all. It's not a plan. That's not how power works. I think he's great as somebody who can move the conversation, but I don't think he has any conception of how to actually implement his agenda and shouldn't be president at all, or vice president. He shouldn't be an executive at all. He should be a legislator and stay there.
I think the listeners probably know too, you know, where Tyler sits in terms of Sanders picking him here. Does anybody think that just having him on stage during those debates could be a hindrance to the electability of Democrats in general? I've read some interesting pieces about the term socialism being thrown around and whether or not people actually agree or disagree with the actual policies that somebody might have. Just the term socialism is such a red flag for people that having someone like Sanders on stage, do you think it's a detriment to, say, the entire party running at the beginning of this election?
I don't. And the reason is, so there's, I think that he generates a lot of enthusiasm in the Democratic Party. So that's the plus side, right? On the negative side, I think that people, let's say under 40, don't have the same negative connotation of socialism like people over 40 do. And I think that anybody who is over 40 and who's going to freak out about socialism is probably a Fox News viewer and isn't going to vote for a Democrat anyway. So I think, in effect, I don't think it matters very much. It might increase the Republican enthusiasm as well, because socialism. But like, I think that they're is going to be that mechanism to create fear in the Republican base anyways, no matter how they do it. And so, no, I think is the short answer ultimately, although you do have to do some calculations to get there. And I can see how intuitively that would make sense, but I think in effect, no.
Yeah, but see, John, the name of the Nazi party was the National Socialist Party.
Just like how the Democrats were racists, right?
See?
Hey, don't spread that shit.
Abraham Lincoln was a Republican, you guys. Did you know that?
Okay, Tyler took Bernie.
Okay, and now I get to go
Tyler,
again.
You got a first pick. Yep,
yeah, you get to go again, baby.
That's me. I mean, I don't really have I don't think there's a wide, like, a lot of variation in here, but I think Kirsten Gillibrand. I mean,
yeah, she's next on my board.
Yeah, totally. Still,
she had a good night.
Yeah, hovering in there.
Yeah.
I think, you know, yeah, it's like I agree with a lot of her positions. I just don't think, you know, she's one of the front runners.
Yeah,
agreed. I think that a lot of the picks that are going to happen over the next two rounds are going to be like, yeah, maybe it might happen. Like it might be feel good by the person picking them. It might be, yeah, I think they maybe have a better shot than this other person that's still left. But
yeah, what do you think, John? Who are you going with?
Yeah.
Oh man, I'm up next. I was. Doesn't matter. I'll tell you later. Okay, so
Williamson. Williamson.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to take my boy Michael Bennett. I love Michael Bennett. Wow. We spent a bunch of time on him earlier. Cool. I think he's a senator from a purple state. He's a white guy who would make a good VP pick for somebody like Kamala Harris. He's my blood brother in that he fucking hates Mitch McConnell more than I do, which is amazing. He has an interrupting and kind of stoned speaking style, which I also really appreciate.
Yeah, he does.
So, you know what?
I love the way he talks.
I'm going to take Michael Bennett.
Nice. Good one.
Good pick.
Yeah, good pick. We all like him.
Good pick.
Yeah, I liked what he said during the debate.
Also, I'll tell this story. I've probably told all three of you this story, but I met him three times one night, and it was kind of awkward.
So the man likes his beer. Very good.
No. I was at a fundraiser, and I met him at the door, and then I met him again because I was working like the table. And then because I'm me, I made friends with the weird guy at the fundraiser who was into Occupy Denver. And then the weird guy took me over to Michael Bennett and was like, "You have to meet this kid." And turns out that I'd already met him three times. And I was like, "We've met." And he was like, "We've met." That's the time I met Michael Bennett.
Classic.
All right, Blake, you got the next pick. What do you got?
So now I'm going to mix it up.
You're going to take Roy Jones, right?
No.
Okay. Who knows if that's a real person who's running?
Yeah, it's not.
I'm like looking at the list of Democrats right now.
He's a real person, John. And for all we know, they're running for president.
That's what I was doing. I was using a random name generator because I couldn't think of a random white guy name.
I was gonna say there's got to be hundreds of Roy Joneses in the United States, so the chance that he's running somewhere is somewhat high, you know.
All right, Blake, who are you going with?
I'm going with Andrew Yang for a very specific reason.
Yang gang, into it.
Yang gang.
Yeah, I know, and I think that was probably one of Tyler's picks. Who was?
No, Kelly, right? Pick?
Kelly did.
I did in the last round.
13th yep. overall.
Yep.
So, he's pretty behind right now, but I thought had a good night. Kind of stood out as one of those characters that nobody knew about, but had interesting ideas and was well spoken, and so he stood out for that reason. One of his main points that I really liked was when he was asked what he would do, like, getting into office immediately, like, what's one of the things you do? I think, what is it, your first 90 days or whatever?
100.
And he said, 100 days. He said he would do, he would implement the UBI. $1,000 UBI a month.
Boom.
$1,000 a month UBI, so universal basic income. And he stated that specifically a lot of great facts and points, but I remember this quote specifically very well. When the American people can get the boot off their throat, they will think much clearer or much more clearly. And what he was saying in that is exactly, again, going back to the youth that's going to be voting now, we are at this point. I feel like there was another comment that was made during the debates that, yes, unemployment's at an all-time low, but people are working 2, 3, and 4 jobs. So what does that mean for those numbers? Yeah. And that said, there's a serious issue right now, I feel like, in our country where we have a lot of people working way too much for way too little. And when you are doing that, it does make it hard to think. And that statement really, someone who's experienced that personally firsthand for many years, that really resonated with me.
Yeah,
and I think that's going to really resonate with the working class. And I think that is really going to propel him forward, maybe not as a front runner, but as a VP pick.
UBI.
I agree, Blake. I actually wish that he had gotten more screen time and more time to talk during the debate. I felt like the couple times that he was allowed to kind of talk for a little bit was fine, but he got shortchanged on a few answers, and a couple times it seemed like they skipped over him for other people that were already on stage. So I would like to hear more from Yang. I think he has more to offer to the general populace than maybe some of the other candidates that were there the second night. But yeah, good pick.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to win, and I think he's going to win. He's going to run in 2024.
Yeah, he'll just be the UBI candidate until we get one.
Yep,
I'm so into that. Do it.
Yeah.
Do it. I'm so into that.
Just it's like, a fascinating concept, yeah. Man. It's a really fascinating concept. And he talked about how he, a little bit, how he would make that work for people with different incomes who didn't necessarily need it.
You know? Yeah.
And it's something worth looking up, Googling his answer on UBI for the Democratic 2020 debates, but or 2019 debates, I guess. But,
yeah. All right. Let's keep it rolling.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
But I have to.
Don't do it.
Tulsi Gabbard.
No! What? Oh, no! Boo!
Yeah. Yeah, wow. I know.
Wow.
Oh, no.
Again, we are talking about people that I think can actually win a national election, not necessarily who I believe and right. would like to be the Democratic nominee. But I think she had a really good night on the first night, and I think she... She brought more
she's a good she's a centered candidate, I feel like, right?
She represents...
I don't think she's going to beat a lot of these other Democrats, but who's left on the board, I don't know anybody else that has a stronger case than she does.
She represents that isolationist wing of the United States, which is both on the left and the right. I think that that's a smart pick, Kelly, but it burns my soul. It breaks my heart.
Again, we're picking who we think is going to win.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, good for you. That would be like you picking like Sidney Crosby in our fantasy hockey or whatever.
Yeah. She was probably going to be my number four, Kelly. So I agree, man. She's I still feel the same way.
Literally last out of 24 candidates I have on my draft board.
John just can't do it. John just can't even
do it. No, I can't. You can't be a... apologist for Bashar al-Assad and expect to get the Democratic or any American nomination.
I agree.
No, it's
anyway. But you can still collaborate with the Ruskies and make it just fine.
Yeah, anyway. I think that same-sex marriage is not okay, but like you're going to run as a Democrat. Okay, next pick, sorry.
Yeah.
Tyler, if you want to hear us rail on Gebert a little bit more, listen to the last episode. We spent a good amount of that one on that. All right, I got the first round pick in round four. I'll keep another one for my initial list and go with Hickenlooper. I'll keep another Colorado boy.
There you go.
I honestly don't think that he raised his stock at all in the debate. I thought he actually hurt himself a little bit, especially muddling along through some of the environmental policies that he was talking about that was started in Colorado. But, you know, overall, he's a fine talker. He's not electable.
That format doesn't lend well to his speaking style, which is a little quirky.
Yeah.
And so, it's, Hick.
All right.
So, Hick.
There you go. Blake.
Is it me?
Is it Blake?
It's Blake.
Yes.
This is a tough one. Because there's several candidates right now that I want to go with.
All you need is love, Blake.
I'd like to trade my pick. For future considerations.
You want to move up in the last round?
So then I'm going to go Eric Swalwell. I thought that he's not a great... He didn't have a stellar night, but he struck a chord. He was one of those candidates that struck a chord with Biden. He made the pass of the torch comment. Right. And I thought that that set him up well as a potential VP pick. I don't think he has a chance to be a front runner, but he's a recognizable face. He's young, and I thought he did okay. He did okay, and I think that
his message was strong enough every time it came back to him, which was gun control, gun control, gun control. And so it's enough to potentially boost him up to maybe talk about some of the issues that he might actually have ideas about. But that's all I got.
I thought he was obnoxious, and if he did anything, he hurt himself.
Yeah.
I did not like his performance. I thought that he was interrupty and dickish. And, like, I understand that you kind of have to, like, jump in there when you're not. But, like...
He was bro-y.
He was bro-y. I just don't think it worked well. I think that it ultimately hurt him with his Buttigieg hit. So, like, I think that he was kind of garbage.
But he's a millennial.
But he's what?
Yeah.
He's a millennial.
He's a young guy.
He's a millennial candidate for president.
And I really like him. I don't really like him, but I like him as a congressman, and I love the fact that his issue is guns. We need to see more vocal Americans about that issue. We talk about it a lot on this pod. I think it's something that we care about. It's something that I super care about personally. And so I like the fact that he is up there. I also like the fact that Hick made that his issue, and he's trying to distinguish himself on that issue. So I like that for the party generally, but I thought that Swalwell was kind of obnoxious.
I thought he was obnoxious too, but you got to remember he's a 38-year-old candidate running for president, and I think he did appeal to a certain demographic.
I think he runs the risk of potentially making himself unelectable.
I agree.
15 years from now, when he's an even better candidate.
I agree.
depending on how he acts on the national stage, that's what I see. I do not think he's electable for the Democratic Party.
Not even close. Right. Especially when you compare him to Buttigieg. It's like, would you like this extremely articulate, very well messaged 38-year-old, or would you veteran mayor of a city, or would you like this obnoxious 38-year-old? Like, there's
But so not a bad instead pick of my fourth round where it's getting thin.
Exactly. Yeah. Instead of my Tulsi Gabbard, I'm picking
Okay,
John, you're up
with the 11th overall selection, not counting the keeper round. I would like to select Governor from Washington, Jay Inslee. I loved his crazy eyes. I think it matches the urgency of his climate change message.
That's fair. Yeah.
He
attracted me with the climate change talk.
Yeah, no, sure. I mean, I love the fact that he is. So for the listeners who don't know, he has made his single issue climate change. He doesn't want to talk about anything else than climate change. He says this is the existential threat of our time. This is the most important thing that we can possibly be focused on. We need a full mobilization of the United States economy and society, like World War II, to keep us under 2 degrees Celsius before we destroy our planet, which seems like if we don't have a planet, politics are going to be hard. Like, so I very much appreciate what he's doing. He's not going to win. And he maybe should like not drink 4 Red Bulls before the debate. But, you know, I, as a moral pick, cause it's the last round, climate change, everybody.
I 100% agree, John. I 100% agree. So, Tyler,
Tyler, we have left it for you. Go ahead and do it.
Well. I just want everybody to know this is unplanned. We had not talked about this ahead of time. This has happened.
Happened, and it's amazing.
But yes, this must happen. And this is, I want everyone to know, this is a serious pick. I'm not kidding here. This is a serious pick. Marianne Williamson. Honestly, she has a better chance of winning than anybody who's left. Because I think even with people on the left, with Democrats, it gets to a point when the candidates are so bad in terms of like just what they're being serious about that you just are like, you know what? Love is going to conquer all. You know what? You're right. That's a better chance than anything else. Fucking go for it.
As far as a message goes, it could actually bring people together to vote for.
That's right.
Like a coherent thing in a debate.
Listen, if she was the candidate, I would absolutely vote for her. If she somehow became the Democratic nominee, I would absolutely vote for her over Donald Trump. There's no question in my mind.
Couldn't be any worse.
What would that debate be like? Can you imagine her debating Donald Trump? It would be so
check
good.
This out.
It's worth the pick just to see that happen. Just put the two of them on a stage and let them talk back and forth at each other. It would be gold star entertainment. That's for sure.
It cannot get any better.
I personally think that, well, first, I just Googled her. I didn't know that she had 4 New York Times number one bestsellers.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's in the business of doing that, Blake. Yeah. She's not multiple times during the debate. She's
but
in the business.
I...
her debate was great. Her debate was great.
I know. So I loved her.
Harness love, you guys. Harness love.
But,
that's right.
Plus, guys, I mean, the JFK reference, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Wait.
That was so good. We sent a man to the moon because JFK's time politics actually worked. He was a man to do it.
I really appreciated the JFK reference because I had that on my baby boomer bingo board. And
so, you're like, yes,
dude, she's been in movies?
What? What movie would she? It doesn't matter.
How to Live Forever.
You guys, we all have to donate money to serious candidates now.
Yeah, like Marianne Williams.
I didn't sign on to that, John. But yeah,
oh,
no,
dude, she's like,
wait, can we do a quick celebrity round, real quick? We gotta go because we've dragged this pod on too long.
Yeah,
sorry,
this has been a long
listeners.
Pod. Oh, celebrity. Oh man,
celebrity. Just
Tyler,
real
you
quick.
Get to pick first. Go ahead.
Hell yeah, I get to go first, so I get to fucking pick Kanye again.
Kanye.
Yeah. Still the best pick. All right, for obvious reasons.
Oh, I know who I'm gonna pick. All right, I got it.
Okay.
Should I go?
You're up.
Okay, yeah. I picked the ghost of Ronald Reagan.
Yeah,
I like it.
He did
the
movies.
Office will be empty.
Look, he has bipartisan support. He takes us back to when America was actually great. He did movies with monkeys. He's perfect for a celebrity pick.
All right, there you go.
Plus, who wouldn't like to see a ghost standing on stage?
Right? Imagine him debating. That would be perfect.
I think that would rock people's ideals of existential threats even more.
I agree.
Than climate change would if they saw an actual ghost of Ronald Reagan debating.
The ghost of Ronald Reagan. Jesus.
Plus, I mean, you're wearing a Ronald Reagan Bad Religion shirt.
I
right
am.
Now, as
I didn't even notice
it. Nailed it. Winning. All right, Blake, who's your celebrity?
I'm going to have to switch it from.
Yeah, The Rock before.
Oh,
that's a good
so
pick.
Hard,
the
dude.
Rock is a good pick. Kanye's a good pick if you're doing keepers for 2024.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm gonna have to go with Oprah.
Oprah's a good pick.
Mm-hmm.
Oprah's
Hell
a
yeah.
legit
Solid pick.
Pick. Oh, there's yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep with Ellen.
Keep with Ellen. Good call. Yeah.
Would Arnold Schwarzenegger count as a politician or a celebrity?
I know, that's a good question.
I guess he's not electable.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, he's not
just
electable.
Just like the ghost of Ronald Reagan is not electable,
yeah.
So I guess, yeah.
You know,
he counts.
Kelly,
he counts.
You're encroaching on my religious freedom by telling me that the ghost of Ronald Reagan is not electable, and so I would appreciate if you refrained from encroaching on my religious beliefs.
Sure. No... John, nowhere in the Constitution does it say a dead man can become president. All right?
Nowhere in the Constitution does it say that it can't.
Exactly.
We'll leave it to the courts, which means at this point, the ghost of Ronald Reagan could be elected. Thank you for your court.
All right. Well, on that note.
You're welcome for the t-shirt idea.
Yeah. That's yours. You can have that. Take that.
Hopefully. And if you don't get around to it, we will eventually. I'm like, so.
That's right.
On that note,
hey. Follow us on the all the social media stuff.
Yeah, do that.
Leave a message for us if you like the episode. Let us know what you want us to talk about. We'll try to pick it up.
Or not. Or we'll just be like, meh.
Soon to come, we will have our big tech talk. Should we break up big technology companies such as Facebook?
Oof. Great topic.
Spoiler alert, yes. Godspeed, everybody.
What up, motherfuckers?
Yes.
That's an excellent tone to start this pod on.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
No, I'm going to restart that. That's not how it was.
Yeah.
That's
a great outro. It's a great outro, though.
It's a great outro.
What's up, motherfuckers?